Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, they call me Poop. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up and be a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is bfcinstitute.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
And welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Delighted to have you back with us again. Welcome to all of our live stream Facebook participants, as well as those of you that are listening from the podcast. Talk Straight is an online radio format designed to assist Building Families and Communities Institute to reach a national audience. And in doing so, we share weekly topics that are germane to real issues facing families and communities on a national level. Yours truly seek to engage various guests from various experience or occupational backgrounds in what we believe to be provocative and important instructional topics of concern. And additionally, this show serves as a catalyst for allowing the organization to reach a national audience on a broader scale. So we're delighted to have you, and we're grateful that anyone and all of you who have tuned in, we have a very special guest tonight that's going to be joining us, in addition to our regular panelist, Pastor Ricky Waller, who is the author of Still High and a avid supporter of our efforts to reach a group of people. The number to call us here live and participate in the conversation is 657-383-0944. Again, that's 657-383-0944. We would love to entertain your question, your comment, and all we ask is that you keep it relevant to our topic as best you can, and to be respectful of the opinions and views of all of our listeners and callers and those that participate with us. All right. I don't think that's a hard task. But, again, we're grateful that you join us tonight on another episode. Very special guest is going to talk with us tonight from our topic. January 16, 1865, Union Army General William Tecumseh Sherman promised newly freed slaves that as a way of making it up to them for the oppressive effects of slavery in America, they would receive 40 acres and a mule. The latter represented tools that would be used for them to become economically independent and viable in America as citizens. Approximately 152 years later, though, we have, in my view, good young men who are descendants of these former slaves that have become servants to urban hustles. Mr. Raphael Dabney is a CEO, founder, and chief economic officer for Tegel Industries, and he's based out of Jacksonville, Florida. Young man, some might say in the millennial generation, who, African American, he'll tell you his story. We're going to have him come on. In case you're a new listener to the show, we provide a monologue with some sort of context for our dialogue, and I will do that as well tonight, and you'll be able to share with us from that. And we're going to have our special guest again, Mr. Raphael Dabney, going to be with us tonight. We have Pastor Ricky Wallen. I see that we have some people in queue already. Just stand by. Bear with us in about another 10, 15 minutes or so. We'll finish, wrap up our monologue, and the number again is 657-383-0944. Please call. If you're listening from Facebook, we want to invite you to join us in our live dialogue. Thank you for listening in, tuning in to us. Let me just say that the intention tonight is not to disparage or to put down young brothers. Heaven knows that was me almost 35 years ago now, in the streets of Chicago. And I thank God that he allowed me to make it and share this story. That's why I share the story as passionately as I do, because if it hadn't been for God and some intervention, I don't know where I'd be right now. Probably somewhere sleeping in my grave. But I'm grateful tonight, and we want you to know that our purpose is to provide information, knowledge that is the power that will take us forward to where we need to go. All right. Having said all of that, our topic again, going from working the cotton fields to working the streets. I got to get my grip, okay? 2 Thessalonians, the 3rd chapter, in the 8th verse and the 10th verse we'll look at tonight. The 8th verse says, "Neither did we eat any man's bread for naught, but wrought with labor, and travail night and day, that we might not be chargeable to any of you." Verse 10 says, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither shall he eat." I want to talk about 40 acres and a mule first. All right? 40 acres and a mule were promised to former enslaved black farmers by Union General William Tecumseh Sherman on January 16, 1865. It followed a series of conversations between then Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton and a radical Republican who was an abolitionist by the name of Charles Schumer, in addition to Thaddeus Stevens. Okay? Following disruptions in the institution of slavery, forced labor, that was provoked by the Civil War, where not only white men, brothers, killed one another, but black men also shed their blood. Many freedmen made the case that given this 40 acres and a mule was a right by these former slaves to work the fields that they were once forced to work as slaves, and they were eager to control their own property. Freed people widely expected to legally claim these 40 acres and a mule after the end of the war. But long after proclamations such as Sherman's special field order, you see, Sherman was a general, and after the Civil War, many generals took over control of the states that were seized after the Civil War. But Sherman's special field order made many black people think, hey, we're going to get it now. We got it, right? We got us a grip. Freedmen's Bureau Act were explicitly reversed, however, okay, in Congress. Some land redistribution, occurred under military jurisdiction during the war. And for a brief period of time, there was this limbo, all right? However, Federal and state policies during the Reconstruction era, beginning in about 1870, really 1865, but that's a fixed period of time, historians say. Those Reconstruction efforts emphasized wage labor. That's what they focused on, and not giving land to former slaves. Okay? Almost all land allocated during the war was restored, though, to pre-war owners. In other words, whites that were slave owners. They got that land back. However, several black communities did maintain control of their land, and some families obtained new land by the Homestead Act. Black land ownership increased markedly in Mississippi during the early 19th century, particularly, though. And that was a large area where you did see blacks got land. The state had much undeveloped bottom land behind riverfront areas and had been cultivated prior to the Civil War. Most blacks acquired land through private transactions after slavery was over, with ownership peaking at about 15 million acres, sum total, in around 1910. Now, before an extended financial recession, though, that caused problems that ultimately resulted in these black people losing that property. Yes, they were in the cotton fields, and they were in control of the land and making their own money. Many of them were still sharecroppers. Don't get me wrong, okay? In fact, after Civil War ended and somewhere around 1889, a gentleman by the name of O.W. Gurley moved from Arkansas to this new state that was started in the early 1900s called Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he started what became famously known as Black Wall Street. It was a wealthy business district. Greenwood, Orchard, and Pine, but Greenwood was the major center, is a neighborhood in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as one of the most prominent concentrations of black or Negro African-American businesses in the United States during the 20th century. It was popularly known, as I said earlier, as Black Wall Street. Amen. This was an example of what former slaves could do to make money for themselves. In other words, they were entrepreneurs. They took a risk on doing for themselves. Unfortunately, a major race riot that lasted about 4 days in 1921 led to the total destruction and dismantling of Black Wall Street. The government itself, the state government of Oklahoma, and whites resisted against the intention of blacks to maintain themselves. And ultimately, this neighborhood was destroyed. Not to be undone, others around the country took up the opportunity, now that they were free, that they can vote, and they did engage in business opportunities. Unfortunately, not many young people are aware of these success stories. Okay? So they were in the cotton fields, and they were in the South, and they were farmers, and they were successful, and they had other successful businesses. They had a movie theater. They had banks. They had insurance companies, distribution centers, and all sorts of things. Okay? Now, something happened, though. I want to talk about drug dealing. How did it become a major business feature for particularly African-American males? In 1970, a book entitled We Charge Genocide, and the preface was written by Ossie Davis, the actor, was written. It was a spinoff from the 1951 paper drafted and written by the Civil Rights Congress, or the CRC, as they call themselves. And it was presented to the United Nations at a meeting in Paris in December of 1951. Both of these documents focused on the fact that there was massive genocide of black people, Negro people, through either lynching, through police brutality, and subsequently, this particular 1970 book focused on the Warner Report about how drugs were infused in African-American neighborhoods and became a major part of the destruction of those neighborhoods. Poor, slum-type neighborhoods. Selling drugs became a significant means of making quick, fast, and easy money for African-Americans across urban cities. The Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986 was enacted into Congress, and it changed the system of federal supervised release from rehabilitative systems, if you got caught with drugs, into a punitive system. In fact, you can get caught with just an ounce and $2, and you're going to do some major time. The bill enacted new mandatory minimum sentences for drugs. You going to jail for as simple as possession of marijuana. Now you add that to some money and have a gun. Bye-bye. We'll see you. Okay? This was a serious deal. Now, I'm not suggesting that whites and others were not affected by this, but by and large and disproportionately, black folk found themselves trying to hustle, trying to make a living, and going to jail. You know that in 1986, near the end of Ronald Reagan's administration, the Office of National Drug Control Policy was created. Okay? And what it did was come up with a whole lot of sophisticated ways, excuse the urban expression, of him and catch up. All right? Unfortunately, many of them didn't have a clue of what was going on. And I should add that around 1959 or so, so many people had left the South, coming to the North for opportunities, they thought, right? Jobs. And they were trying to benefit from the New Deal of 1935 that Roosevelt talked about. And when they were hit with the reality that it wasn't as easy as they thought, they were forced to scramble. Many worked hard. Don't get me wrong. Many worked very hard, okay, in factories and things of that nature. Some of them started their own businesses. But a large number of them fell victim to the hustle. And they began to rob and steal from one another. As a way of protecting themselves, they formed gangs. And these gangs said, we're going to look out for our neighborhood, our block, and we're going to provide for us, even if we have to steal from the other neighborhood. Hence, we have this drive now to make a living that involves self-destruction. Now, young cats today in 2017 are still on a hustle. If you talk to them about what the elders did from slavery and forward, they would tell you, I ain't going back to no cotton field. You ain't going to get me do no farming. There's a shortage right now. In fact, the federal government under President Obama provided opportunities specifically for minorities, African Americans, to participate in such things. Unfortunately, few of us did. And few of us want to, particularly young people. What they want is to get a grip. Now, let me explain to you what a grip is, okay? And I'm going to bring my guest in. I want him to talk to me. I believe he can help me out here. Now, let me just explain what a grip is right quick. Then we're going to open up the phone lines here. All right. Now, you may think a grip is just having a hole or handle. Okay, nah, wrong answer. A grip is $10,000. Now, here's the way it is. It's called such because the size of a wad of bills. That's 10 stacks. A stack is 10 $100 bills put together and folded over. You take 10 times that $100 bill, put the fold together, and there you go, you got a grip, baby. You understand what I'm saying? And these guys see that I'm rich when I can walk around with a grip. The money wad is so big that all you can do is get the best handle you can on it with your hand. And you walking around like a barnyard pimp, like a chicken, swinging from side to side, thinking you really got it going on because you done got yourself a grip. What the cats are saying, listen, I ain't trying to go back to no cotton field. I ain't trying to do no farming because I got me a grip. And look, that's all I'm looking for is to get myself a grip. I'm honored tonight to open up the phone lines to our special guest, Mr. Raphael Dabney out of Jacksonville, Florida. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Hey.
All right. In just a minute, let me give you an opportunity to introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about what you do. And if I might, I'd like to toot your horn a little bit. But we got Pastor Waller here, Ricky Waller, our regular panelist. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Good. Thank you. How you doing, Pastor?
Good. I know you got something for me here, Pastor, but let me get Brother Dabney in here, all right? And we also have 615-3072 on with us. Welcome back, 3072.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. The number is 657-383-0944. We got a little time to talk now. We got about an hour and 9 minutes. Get in where you fit in. Mr. Dabney, welcome again, sir. Thank you for joining us tonight. Tell us a little bit about Tegel Industry, which you are the CEO of, and what you're doing. You and your beautiful wife started your business, and y'all doing your thing. And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, like you said, we're in Jacksonville, Florida, right now at the moment. Pretty much what happens as a company is we do websites and software, so mobile applications, desktop applications, specialty software for companies and businesses to tie them closer to the products and also as like marketing outreach to their customers. So we pretty much just do kind of custom solutions to help them out, you know, help them be more efficient, do better work.
Okay. And let me raise your flag a little bit. When I ran my political campaign, Mr. Dabney and his wife did all the graphics, did the website and the whole nine yards, and that's one of the best things. We were not successful at winning our campaign, but many people praised that work, and I want to thank you for doing that, and thank you for being such a young couple that's making a difference. What that said to me is that there was hope, Mr. Dabney, that everybody ain't caught up. You understand what I'm saying? But some people had a vision. You heard my monologue. Correct me. Get me straight now. Where did I go wrong?
I think you got it. I think you kind of nailed hit the nail on the head there.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about this. What do you think is the nature of young people's mentality today? That I'd rather fight and die for a grip than to sustain a business concept or something that's long lasting.
I think there is a little bit of a misunderstanding and maybe even a little bit of a distrust. I think the source is confusion. They only see one way, marketed to them, you know, with the media, with the music, with the culture. They only kind of see one way out. And they, you know, and they look at some other more means of traditional honest work as maybe not being possible or as not being real. That doesn't really work, you know, that type of thing.
Okay.
So, yeah, I definitely think that's it.
What's the downside
of some honest work?
Yeah, what's the downside?
The downside is that you could do a good job and still not come out on top. And it's not as flashy. Sometimes it's hard. It take hard work to get the flashy stuff. You know what I mean? And I think that it's definitely with the culture and with the media misrepresented to them as far as like when they see the flashy things, when they see the cars, when they see the money, when they see the women and stuff like that. I don't think that they really understand that that is at the pinnacle of a lot of years of work. That's a culmination of a lot of work. That's not just, you know, them getting out there for a little while and then, you know, they just blow up. It doesn't work like that. I mean, even for music artists and stuff like that, those guys might seem like they just came out of the blue, but really a lot of those guys, you'll see, they've been working at that for years. So
you got to work
in that. I think that they're afraid of that. You know, the downside could be that I could try hard for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, doing the same thing as far as honest work goes, and I still won't be where I need to be. It might take me a decade or two, you know, to get the amount of skill and knowledge that I need to be successful at that absorbent level.
Yeah, Okay. Pastor Waller is here, and my son and I read Pastor Waller's book, Still High, and really it's his story about how he overcame the very character that we're talking about over 40-some years ago. Sadly, though, there are young guys that got gift, got imagination and talent, and they get stuck here. Pastor, talk to us a little bit about that right quickly, because really, Pastor, what they're talking about is, listen, I got to get my grip, man. I ain't trying to go do no real work, though, but I wanted to come quick, fast, and easy. Talk to me about that, Pastor.
Yeah, you really actually said a lot, man, and, you know, all wrapped up into the conversation tonight. When you combine it all together, you know, there's a lane. One lane, when you're on that track, is a slow lane.
Yeah.
And then there's another lane, it's called the fast lane. And, you know, money is flowing on each lane.
Right.
Now,
right.
You are in the middle. Of which will you choose? Would I go to some restaurant or to some business and allow them to promise me a check, you know, to work the whole week? Matter of fact, the first week you got to work, you don't get money. And then
yeah, they hold one over, don't
they? Yeah, they promise you 2 weeks from now, you know, you're going to get a paycheck. but then he's going to fast lane. Some right here, right now available. And someone introduced you to that. And it's not a person's fault. It's called a trap, caught in the grip. I heard the language about the money, which that is. They got some fascinating ways of talking about the kind of money that they're holding, stacks and something I'm not too familiar with. I've been excluded from that kind of money and everything, so I don't have no need in trying to figure out what $1,000 mean and what $10,000 mean and how do they describe it. But I want to talk about, if you will, how much joy I'm going to get, I believe, tonight in the conversation. It's like being in a war. It's like being in a war, and it's like being a soldier. And to be a good soldier, you have to be lined up with the will of God. Not everybody knows that. See, I didn't know that, so I was a soldier for the enemy. And being in the grip like I was, you know, I had to follow the instructions, and before I knew it, man, he utilized, and I use myself as an example every time, he utilized me to cause other people to be caught in the grip. And once you get in the grip like that, man, it's not easy to just get free from it. They say it's easy money, but it's hard work. When I say it's hard work, it's really some hard work. But listen to what the scripture says here, Pastor, if you don't mind. It says, thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. But the next scripture says, no man that warreth entangled himself with the affairs of this life, that he may see him who has chosen him to be a soldier. See, no one entangled himself. It's just what's introduced to you. You don't even know that you're being captured. You see, now you're entangled. And that was me, man, entangled, tied up, twisted, and couldn't get loose. But the money was fast. The money was instantly, and it was a lot of it. And all of a sudden, it's like, why would I go now and get a job somewhere and wait a week or 2 weeks to get some money that I'm getting right here, right now? So it's amazing, man. There's a lot of soldiers that's getting money. And it's called success. But to have good success, you have to be inside the will of God to do that, man. And most people don't know the will of God, and that's understandable.
Right.
And that's the grip. They can talk about the money being the grip all they want to, but, man, the consequences that come from it.
Now,
man.
I appreciate that, Pastor, and I want Mr. Dabney to talk us a little bit more about how did he go about changing his way of thinking, because I'm sure he was in high school and around there, and talk to us about that in just a second. Let me take a minute to recognize on Facebook, thank you guys for your love here, Inna Sutton, Robert Taylor, Raquel Carla D. Shelton. Welcome and thank you guys. Feel free to join us. If you don't want to, I understand. I know I'm fat and ugly, but feel free to join us here live, 657-383-0944. And lest I forget another call that's online with us now, 3072. Any comments so far right now before we go to we're going to do a brief break, commercial, and then I want you to listen, Mr. Dabney, to Lunaz. He talk about he got five on it. Okay? But let me hear from 3072 before we go to a break.
Well, hi there, Pastor Waller and Mr. Dabney. I just want to know, does G's get to go to heaven? I mean, that's how they looking at it. They just, hey, they try to do their thing to support their families. They thinking, you
wow.
know, can they not do wow. that and still make it to heaven?
The question is, does a thief get to go to heaven? My Lord. Hold on. Well, I'm telling you the truth. Hold on. Y'all hold your horses. Now hold your horses. Does a thief get to go to heaven? My God. Pastor, you're going to have to answer that one, man.
Yeah,
all
right, doing,
let me, huh?
I just want to say hello to him. He's awesome, man.
Hey.
We'll be right back after this briefing.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution, and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Dr. Reuben Dockery, and we're talking from the topic, going from working the cotton fields to working the streets. I got to get my grip. If that's you, you want to talk to us about it, or you got an opinion, give us a call, 657-383-0944. We still have time. Tonight we have on with us as our special guest, Mr. Raphael Dabney, who's a business owner, young cat, who could be in jail or out there hustling, but he's making an honest living, and he's an entrepreneur. Mr. Dabney, tell me about it, man. You got five on it? How you do it, man?
Hey, man. Well, pretty much I started early. You know, one of the biggest advantages we have sometimes as young people is time. So I started early, and first thing that's important to do, first thing that I did was to develop a skill that would actually be marketable.
Okay.
You know, something that, one, I had a keen liking to doing, maybe better than other people, and then something that matching that up with a need that other people have as well. So what I had started doing was I started with just websites, and I started researching and learning and practicing, you know, putting those together, some very basic forms of programming, and, you know, just kind of start piecing things together bit by bit, self-taught, and, yeah, just start piecing the games together bit by bit. I started going with the smaller projects, doing free work for some people just to get started, you know what I mean, get my hands on, like, some real-world projects and stuff like that, and then just taking it, you know, from project to project, you know, challenging myself, getting more advanced ones, adding more different types of programming to the skill set, and just kind of taking it slow.
Now, tell me the truth now. You must have had a silver spoon in your mouth when you were born. You had it going. Your forehead going on.
Well, you know, I did have both of the parents in the home.
Okay.
I definitely wouldn't call no silver spoon by no means necessary, but I definitely never wanted, you know, we definitely always had all of the basics, you know what I mean? Had a loving family, you know, always had food and stuff like that.
So then nobody up in a weed take
no,
run down
no,
and whip?
Not, well, all of that stuff is always around, you know what I'm saying? You can't really escape none of that. And, you know, people get caught up in it at really all different levels. You'll see people that do have the silver spoons, and they still get caught up, you know, in stash, like they still get caught up in the drugs and stuff like that. So it's not something that I think is just particularly, I think it disproportionately catches up more to people that are in some of those more stressed, more dysfunctional type of family situations. But, you know, it's around, and you kind of get caught up in it, you know, no matter what your family background is, really.
Right. Let me ask you this question. And I'll open this up to 3072 and Pastor Wall as well. How can young people who want to be economically independent? Now, what I praise the young cats with out there on the grind is they really want to make it for themselves. They want to live the American dream. I don't fault them for that. Okay? And they want to be happy. I don't fault them for that. But how would you advise them if they wanted to be economically independent, to be trained to a position or to position themselves, rather, to own a successful business? It's one thing to get out there, but there are markers of success. Talk to me about that.
So, I mean, definitely the first thing that, you know, I would have to forewarn them on, and I would think anybody that is using kind of like a business type of situation to exclusively feed their family and stuff like that, is that you cannot be in it for the quick buck, and you cannot be in it for the short term. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint, and
wow.
You have to be thinking strategically about the future and how to better and better position yourself.
I don't mean to be rude, but wait a minute. You said you can't be in it for the quick. What I really fantasize about is having that grip so I can show everybody my money. If you're saying I gotta wait, I don't know if I'm with that.
And that's the thing that you got, you know, and that's just the biggest thing, I guess, to communicate and just to really convince, I guess, them of, is just that there is no such thing as the quick buck. The quick buck don't last. If you get the quick buck, it don't last. Just as quick as it comes, as quick as it goes. And, you know, what they want really more than just the quick buck is they want the quick sustainer buck. They don't want the money. Because if you, let's say you be successful in the streets or something like that, you have a bunch of drug activity going on or just any illegal stuff at all going on.
Right.
If you get successful. The height of your success means that you are constantly looking over your shoulder from, one, getting all of your, all the things you built up taken away from you, from the government and the law, or somebody trying to kill you and take it all over. That's the height of where you got to look up to. If you Pablo Escobar, if you the black Pablo Escobar, that's the height of what you got to look for, is always worrying about if somebody trying to get in and kill you or something, or if you finna get arrested.
So,
Don't nobody really live like that.
So are you saying in one hand you got the grip, and the other you better keep that nine ready? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So somebody trying to hate on you, trying to get what you got?
Absolutely. And the thing is, time is going to go by, and you're not always going to be a young man. You might be down for the fight right now, a couple years.
Right.
But you can be saying that you're still going to be trying to fight people off and keep up and hang. And, you know, 10 years later, you still doing this. It don't work out like that. And even if you say, well, you know, live fast, die young, and you out of here, I guarantee you, you're not celibate. So the problem is that you are getting into the world, making relationships with people, creating other life, and then leaving them abandoned because you're going to be dead or you're going to be in jail somewhere.
But you've already
interacted and created other people and just left them. And they're just going to continue that same cycle.
I see. I think 3072 was in agreement with you. You want to expound on that, 3072?
Yeah, well, I was joking but serious. I mean, I'm no stranger to the streets. However, I don't reside there. I know people that's been in the game. And sitting down talking to them, some of them really just want to do what you were describing earlier, which is try to make a life for themselves and their family. Now, nobody's taught them about the glitz and glamour of it, you know, and how that's even dumb, drawing attention to the fact that you are stealing and the fact that you are committing a crime and breaking the law. So they don't even have sense enough to do that. And I got a question for Pastor Waller. So let's say the biggest dope dealer of Chicago came to you, and he wanted to give his life to Christ. How would you, and I think this is part of the problem, and I think it's sad that people are out there selling dope or whatever, but there are some people that's wanting to get out the game and come back home to the church. How would you advise them? How would you direct them? What would you tell them to do? Would you tell them to burn all the money they made, or would you instruct them maybe to repent and try to, whatever they have, start a business? What advice would you give them? They have nowhere to go when they want to come home. There's no home to come to.
You're
asking the right man. Go ahead, Pastor. Get him, Pastor.
I love how she dressed that man. She's working me really hard, and I love that man, you know. That's what we need. We need more questions like that because, you know, what she's doing right now, she's reminding me, Pastor Waller, you have something to offer. How would you go about it? Stuck in the game, I was that individual that she's talking about. And so I would see with them my experience. And I would let them know what worked for me. And I understand it's not easy to turn away from what you're doing. I said, but you have to line up with preparation. In other words, you have to be right where you are, and you make the move. And this is what it is. It's a faith walk. And it's a pain that's so deep. It's so severe. It's just like when you're turning on a new lease of on life. You know, you come as you are. What happens? God started working on you on the inside, which people may not see. You change your direction, but all the time while they're talking, you're receiving strength while you're waiting on the ongoing thing. And so I love that question. And this is what I would have to say. See, the sharp man sees the evil, you know, and takes cover, while the simple goes straight on and cover. So I would let them know that I wasn't a sharp man. I thought I was. I was the simple, and I went on and got a lot of trouble. Now, to keep in mind, she said something earlier, and I was just fascinated by what she said earlier about those that are hustling, that are doing their thing, but have a great heart and want to go to heaven themselves. And I believe that some of them would end up in heaven. I'm not saying that in a negative way about people that's in church, because the responsibility of people who hold the answer are in church, supposedly, and are not rendering it to the people, so their hand the blood will be on their hands, and the person who they think won't go, we end up making it. I like to
agree.
Set up according to the scripture. Listen to this right here, and I want you to listen to this with an open mind. It says, but for if it had happened, it had been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than after you have known it. See, it's one way not to know. It's better not to know. So if you don't know better, like I was, I wasn't running from the police from the start. I wasn't ducking. I wasn't hiding. I was getting my hustle on as a person walking into a trap thinking that, hey, man, I just made $10. I just, I wasn't thinking about running and ducking. That I ran into that along the way and found out that I'm breaking the law. I didn't know it from the start. I'm just going to give me some fast money so I can have some right now. And I want to let my mother know that I appreciate what she's done for me, things like that. And I commend the brother that didn't have to go through that, and we need more of him. But that question, how I would reach that brother who's got all that money, I wouldn't tell him, the man, get rid of your money, because God didn't do me like that. He allowed me to come just as I was, and slowly the money became less important. So this is what I did. All of my money that I had, I didn't have a bunch of it, but I still had a small piece of paper, though. And gradually, slowly, my money, it took about two or three years for it all to be gone. But when God got my full attention while I was down in the heaven, I fully depended upon him, and I wasn't going to let nothing and nobody change my direction once I started to lean on him. And that's what happened. And so he brought me up from not having no money, but I had peace. I was no longer running and ducking and dodging from the police. That's where the joy comes in. It's called slowly being restored. That's what I would say to him. You are, and watch God do for you what you can do for yourself.
All right.
That's what I would say.
All right. I appreciate it. Let me get to Mr. Dabney here, because you're saying something that's good, Pastor Waller. Some kind of way we have to get that message transferred to the streets, though. Okay. And the truth of the matter is, as long as I've been the pastor, if I come purely from what we're used to, somebody's going to shut down on me. So, Mr. Dabney, I want you to help me out here. I don't believe that you were exempt from the same challenges and the excuses that many make for themselves. Politicians can't be trusted. Preachers can't be trusted. I'm going to put the oil where the squeak is. This is talk straight. Sometimes my parents or family can't be trusted. And I can't trust nobody but pistol and my hustle. Mr. Dabney, talk to me now. What determines a young man's quality of life in the United States of America? What determines if you are able to become a business entrepreneur like yourself, or if you got to become a slave to the hustle in the street?
Well, I think that it's exactly what you were talking about. It's mistrust is what it is. It's a mistrust for everything that they look around. And they don't know what they can trust or who to trust. And that creates an isolated type of situation for them and makes it to where, you know, they have to use whatever limited knowledge they have to make something work. And for people that are usually going to be in a more lower income type of families, more the project type of life, they are going to, the knowledge that they have is just going to be the streets. So that's just the tool that they use. It's not that they are just necessarily just born loving the streets. It's just, that's just the tool that they have, and that's what they know is true. They know that when I take this dime bag and go sell it, somebody's going to hand me some money for it. They know that's true. So, you know, they look around, and like you said, they don't feel like they can trust the preacher. They don't feel like they can trust the politicians. They don't feel like they can trust their parents. And sometimes, you know, it's not that they don't love their parents and stuff like that, but they just they don't see their parents maybe being successful or maybe doing the things that they should be doing or want to do. So they feel like, how could I listen to you? You know what I mean? How could you know what you're talking about? So don't see any example. You know, they don't see any example. So, you know, as far as your direct question, as far as how can they, you know, how can somebody be self-sufficient? You know, I think that what they need to do is for sure pay attention to whatever skill set, they're naturally inept at. Everybody has something special about them. Everybody does something well. And they usually do it well from a very young age. It's just usually somebody always have, they will always have something that everybody's inner circle, family members and friends will be able to say, well, yeah, they've always so-and-so-and-so. When people learn to take their personal skill, which is, you can't tell me everybody's personal skill is selling drugs, but if they pay attention to maybe if they have a knack for connecting people together, socializing, the same skill that you need to do to be successful at selling drugs and stuff like that, having a unique source for the product. Whatever skills that you have, if they can take those same skills and apply them to legal activities or any other activities, then they'll be in good shape. Because it's not that all of, it's not that the guys are dumb or that they got the wrong ideas or skill sets. It's just that they're not using them in the right they're not using the right vehicles to exercise them. So,
yeah.
You know, it's really just one of those things where they need a lot of some guidance. There needs to be a lot of examples, because you won't just invent the stuff. You know what I mean? You have to have somebody to show or to demonstrate what the way is so that they can do that way.
Correct, correct. Okay, and I want to emphasize something, a point that you're making. Really, to be honest, it's a culture. It's a way of life that is driven by a poverty mentality. And what that mentality says is, I've never had, I've had to struggle, and so I'm going to justify doing impulsively whatever makes me feel good right now and bring the fastest relief to my pain. So oftentimes, even bringing children in the world, it's a response to pain and passion. Okay? And I like what you're saying. I appreciate you being on, Mr. Dabney, because I want young cats to understand that no matter what's going on in your environment, you're in control. Nobody controls your decision to live or die with you. And when you master, your environment and you master your circumstances, basically you place yourself in a position to determine where and how far you go. It's up to you, though. Some people think that you got to be a slave to the hood and to the hustles of the hood. Now, interestingly enough, I mentioned that there are resources. In fact, I know of at least three states that have agricultural distribution. They say they do anyway on their website. Somebody got to hold them accountable to it. In other words, they will lend you land if you would go and work on the farms and produce and distribute certain products. For instance, there's a demand for corn, right? There's a demand for other cottons and other products and what have you that are distributed not just in America but around the world. But guess what?
Now, can I interject?
Give me 1 second. Hold your thought. Don't lose your thought. Guess what we can't find today? We can't find many young people, even who are in high school, who are willing to even consider that as a way of an entrepreneurial venture. And that's problematic because of the mentality that goes with the culture of poverty. All right, go ahead, 3072. Go ahead, 3072.
I mean, not to keep making excuses. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead, talk.
Okay, not to make excuses for law-breaking and dope dealing or whatever. However, we have to realize, like you brought up, that corn industry or that cotton industry, or there's grants for this, or the government. Who's giving those people the knowledge of that stuff?
Wow.
Who's sending them where to go even? They don't even know about half of that stuff. I watched a program, I guess a week or two ago, about how Animal Planet, these Hispanics, man, what a novel idea. They were doing a hog farm to where they was making a killing, $2,000 a week. And guess who found out? Because they wasn't licensed. The government,
the
people. They came and shut them down. That's not selling dope. But anytime somebody want to try to get the upper hand or try to just support themselves or whatever, it seemed to be a problem. So even though dope dealing is wrong, I'm not trying to promote that. I'm just saying that makes it even harder, and it just turns them right back to that easy, what they think is easy, because that's really the hardest, but to the street.
Hold right there.
She's right on top, and I like to see.
I know she is.
Ahead,
I'm going to help her out, though.
Yeah.
I'm going to help out, Pastor. I'm going to help out right now.
Okay, thank you.
The purpose of this dialogue is to allow us to reach 13 cities now across America that have the same problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, here, what are we bringing to them? What are we bringing to them? Are we going to give them a quick fix? No, we're going to give them the knowledge necessary to take advantage of the resources that come from your taxes, okay? And what I'm saying is this, 3072, that you're absolutely right. I heard Mr. Dabney say, if you're not willing to discipline yourself for the long haul, see, that's what most cats don't want to do. They want it right here, and they want it right now. You got to throw that out the window. You got to put your work in. You got to put your work
sir.
In. And if you don't put your work in, whatever you do, it won't last.
That's true.
Are you walking with me? Now, here's a catch. Here's a catch. When you go out, ain't no need of telling the dude to give me your drugs and give me your gun if you're not going to tell him how to sustain himself, because he's subject to split
there
your
you
head
go.
Wide open.
First thing
you need to do is to have a plan for him. And one of the things we're bringing with our lecture series is the information about, first, how to redirect your thinking. And change your thought pattern that the only way I can live is to be a hustler in the street. You got to throw that away. You got to throw that away. I don't care if you're 9 or if you're 59. You got some old cats around here with that same mentality. Okay? You got
to
get rid of that.
Need to sit down.
The problem is we have a culture. We have a culture of poverty that drives a lot of our behaviors, and we don't even realize the correlation between that negative outcomes and this behavioral mentality.
Yep.
So you raise the next point, and the truth of the matter is...
One thing I want to piggyback on what you said there was that, you know, a part of the problem is definitely that lack of knowledge and the lack of reach, you know, for those people to be informed about those things. But one of the things that your question really was pointing to was, what is it with the response that when you bring the knowledge to some of those individuals, the response you get is almost like an insult. Like, how dare you suggest I go and sweat and work?
Right, right.
You know, so it's not so much in this particular instance that, you know, the lack of knowledge flow is an issue, but I think one of the things that's keenly interesting as well is that there is a subset of situations where the people, the young people, have some knowledge and just flat out feel like it don't apply to them or that's not for me. And I think that's even more interesting because that begs the question of, if we had a full channel of knowledge and communication and information, would it be taken advantage of?
Right.
Well,
3072.
Let me say something.
I'm sorry. Let me get 3072 passing, then I'll get a floor to you. Go ahead, 3072. You going to say something?
No. Go. Let Pastor Waller go. I'll go after him.
Yeah,
okay,
because
ahead,
I want to elaborate on this. She raised such a great question. She said, here's this guy that wants to stop. Here's this guy that's got plenty of money. Here's this guy that's doing all of that he's doing, but he have a heart to change. That's where she was at, and I love that. And I went into my book of page 61 because this is very brought up. And in the fourth paragraph, it says, my compassion for the people in my community continue to flourish. I wanted the very individual who were still caught up to stop doing drugs as well. This desire to stop selling drugs increased day by day. I didn't have a plan, but every day I woke up, I continued to see the hurt and harm I was bringing to the streets of Israel. Now that I'm off drugs and back to making plenty of money, it just didn't feel right. God knew it was weighing on me.
You know,
at first, I was looking for this big sign to show me the way. But okay. I decided to completely wait on God. One more thing.
Okay.
It was not easy to turn down the money. But one day, I just told myself that I would not do it anymore. Again, practicing something different is quite amazing. So you raised up, that was awesome that you raised that up. And that's what I would present to the guy. I know it's not easy, but it can be done.
Okay.
And you know, and it was a pain that I was continually selling drugs to my community, and I was determined to stop. So it was outstanding. I like that what you brought up. I needed to hear that for myself. So now I won't go back with that question that you raised. You just helped me even more.
All right. All right.
Well,
3072. I see you online. 1451, 615, 1451. Give me a second. We're coming right to you on Talk Straight. Go ahead, 3072.
I was just going to say to Pastor Waller, I mean, daily my heart bleeds. Again, I know people. I know the conversations. People that maybe don't know the street, or maybe they've had a life a little more privy to maybe not knowing somebody that's out there doing that, or their boyfriend, whatever the case is, they are people too. As wrong as they may be, they are nothing more. The biggest killer is a child of God too. They still are a human being with feelings, wants, desires, and needs just like us. And I think moreoverly, we need to see that and recognize that. Take the picture of the monster away first,
because
you're not going to run up to a monster. But if you envision another human being, then you can sit down and there can be open dialogue to where you can help.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Let me go to 615-14, the last four digits, 1451. Welcome to Talk Straight. Question or comment?
Comment.
Okay.
I was listening in, and I just wanted to comment about as far as, like, barriers to entry with new businesses and minorities doing business. I think one of the barriers is definitely not having support from their own community. You see that that's a big difference between both white businesses and Hispanic businesses, other foreign businesses. They have support from their community. And I think that African Americans not only have a lack of support when it comes to their household and upbringing, but they also have a lack of support from the community around them. You know, there's a running joke about, you know, I don't deal with black businesses because they don't give me good service. You know, what is a black person supposed to do? Every black business doesn't have poor service. There's plenty of other businesses that don't have good service.
Right.
That's a great point.
That is, that's a big barrier, is that, you know, there's that lack of support, and then also, you know, I don't think that we are educated on the different resources out there for our businesses, and we definitely already don't have the upper hand when it comes to that.
Sure.
I think
that's a great point.
Hold on one second, 3072. So I think your overarching point here is that one of the focus of the community, the African-American community, is not only to develop an appreciation and embrace the philosophy of entrepreneurship, business ownership, but also to dispel the idea that we will not and will make reasons not to work and support African-American entrepreneurship, which is very important. And you're absolutely right that there are some variables there that come into play. Okay, 3072, you were trying to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to chime in off of what 14, whatever her number was. Today I had an experience. So I'm in a new area, and I was looking, I'm an African American, I was looking to get my hair done. The place where I am is predominantly Caucasian. So I looked to the hood because, anyway, my experience there, that place was awesome. Black owned, black ran. Everything set up, debit payment, everything was tremendous. And she's absolutely right. the first thing that, or the first time that I can do a, give them a good review so other people come there, then I will. We definitely need to support one another, especially when we're doing things good in a community.
Well, and I think to that, point, I think that one thing you said that stood out is that they had a good presence online. They had a good professional shop. And I think that that's another thing that Black people are really missing the mark on, is investing in themselves and in money and paying for marketing and paying for professional websites and paying for a professional place to do business in. You know, we have to start investing in ourselves, putting our money where our mouth is, and really putting in the work on that, in on that area.
Okay. Let me ask this question, because I'm hearing a theme here. Does it really matter what one's age or where they geographically located or their ethnicity? Does that determine your level of success or failure in business?
Sometimes it does.
Okay. Does it? All right. All right. I was really asking Mr. Dabney and 1451. Do you think that that is the major factor? Or I hear what 3072 is saying. I think she's right. But do you think that that is a major determinant?
No. It's definitely not a major determinant. However, it does. No, it's just an excuse, in my opinion, if you say that that's the reason why you are not successful in business. However, it is very important to state that that determines what direction you take, right? It changes how you approach the business and how you approach reaching out to people. Every ethnicity or every different background cannot try to approach business the same way. You know what I mean? It's different paths for every different market. And if you're coming at it from a Black perspective or as a white business, you have to do things differently to reach a different audience. But that's really what the heart of business is, determining who the market is, no matter who they are, and determining how best to reach them. That translates, you know, all ethnicities, all backgrounds, all everything. It translates that, you know. I think that sometimes when people feel like they're stuck or they can't do something, it's because they're in business, they're trying to reach a certain market the wrong way with the wrong tools. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
like, for instance, you know, go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I was just saying, like, so, you know, as an example, you know, starting out as like a Black business doing anything, doing hair, for instance. If you are feeling like, you know, you're not being successful or you can't get things moving, or, man, you know, all these other white shops are doing better, you have to look at how you're approaching things. Who are you trying to reach? Are you trying to reach the people who are going to pay value, paying extra money for a good job? If you're trying to reach them, then you can't approach them with a bad location or with bad materials or the bad environment. You have to approach them with a nice, clean place. You have to approach them with a safe-looking place. They got to travel here and sit here. You got to make them feel comfortable. You have to approach them sometimes with clear English. You know, even, I mean, that sounds like, you know, bad, like, hold on now, how are you going to tell somebody how to talk? But, I mean, that's something that makes those customers feel comfortable. Would your ideal customers like to come in and feel like they're in, you know, I don't know, some neighborhood conversation, or would they like to feel like they're in a professional place where the people there are educated? So you have to understand whoever it is you're trying to reach. And sometimes in business, you're trying to reach those four people. Sometimes that is exactly the market, right? You look at those hair stores all the time, and they have this terrible marketing with all of these 50 pictures on a window of all these different types of, but that's their market response to that. The ladies in the hood is looking for weeds. They look for those things to go buy. So it just depends on who your market is and trying to reach them how they understand you. So I don't think that the ethnicity is going to determine your success.
Okay.
I was going to agree with.
Go ahead, 3072.
I was going to agree with Mr. Dabney. Certainly, that place I was, and I'm a critic. I can be the toughest critic. I was thoroughly impressed and proud of whoever owned that shop. Everything was just professional. It was just business. I got my hair styled where I wanted to. The young ladies in there talked to everybody with a high level of respect. On top to they were up to date with everything. Online pages, you name it. Whatever you needed, they had it. And, yeah, you felt safe and comfortable. The shop was clean.
Right. Well, now, guys, I'll tell you, my read of the National Chamber of Commerce report on why any business, not just African-American, but any business fail within the first 5 years is if you don't have a well-defined business plan with projections into the future and an evaluation method. So then this is what Mr. Dabney was speaking to. If you start out with a product and with a mode of marketing that product, and you see that it's not reaching the target group that you want to, and yes, you need to be specific about who you want to reach, right, in some cases. And that may not just be black or white people, but it's people that are willing to spend their money because you have a good product that they respond
That's right.
to and a good marketing strategy. So without a plan, a failure to plan is a plan for failure, which is why the business plan is so vitally important. I'm sorry, you're going to say something, 1451?
Yeah, I would like to speak on that. Recently, we saw a show, Shark Tank. People are familiar with it. Two twin brothers came on there with a great app, and everybody loved it. But the question was, how are you going to make money? And they could not answer that clearly, and so they did not get invested in. The next show, they had a new shark on there that she wasn't a contestant. She was an investor, but she talked about her company and how she turned it into this billion-dollar company. And I asked myself, I said, what advantage did she have? How was she able to take this simple concept and turn it into millions, but they can't get their stuff together? And I realized that there's a big story that's not being told, which is it was very clear that if you paid attention to her story, she had a lot of education from the start. Mm-hmm. So she talked about how she was an entrepreneur as a child, how she was doing entrepreneurial things as a child, how her father supported her and helped her do this venture and that venture. And so I began to see that it might have sounded like she was an overnight success, but she's been working at this since childhood. And so when she gets to become in her early 20s, a business plan is something that she's already dealt with versus these two brothers who this might be their first venture. And I think that the blurry line as far as geography and gender, or not gender, but race goes and is concerned, is that, you know, we definitely as African Americans, and really, you know, we really have to fight a little bit longer and a little bit harder, especially if we were not raised in an entrepreneurial environment, and especially because the barrier is a little bit higher. So we have to be able to run that race a little bit harder and a little bit longer. And I think that, you know, because a lack of resources and things like that, sometimes we're just not able to make it to the finish line.
Well, I'm glad you said that, 1451. My experiences have been the greater fight is your family and the people around you who doubt that you can be successful. Now, they've never tried it. They've never done anything. And they really want you to slow down because they don't believe you should or could do it either. So that's your biggest fight, to convince yourself that it's worth me putting the time in, the discipline, to be successful at what I say I'm going to do. If you're going to say you're going to do something, lay out a plan to evaluate how well you either did or did not do what you promised yourself. So you got to promise yourself, I'm going to be successful, before you try to prove to anybody else. Am I wrong about that, Mr. Dabney?
No, that's spot on.
I mean, a lot of times we look for validation from other people who don't share our vision. And because they don't share it, they don't want you to have it. I wish I had a witness here tonight.
Well, and maybe it's not that they don't want you to have it. They just don't see it. You see it, but they don't.
Right. Right.
Goodness.
Right. Yeah. Pastor, were you going to say something?
Yeah, that's twofold right there. You know,
you see it, but they don't. And then for those that see it and don't want you to have it, they have to put a plan together to make sure that you don't accomplish it. And, you know, this is what happened. And being that I played sports, you know, I had a great coach. And I remember that when the other team used to want to press us, they don't let us know that they're going to press, meaning they're going to try to get the ball back to us. And then we have to be equipped to break the press, you see. And
right.
So what I love about this conversation tonight is that in our community, you know, there's a plan to make sure that people fail. Now, great conversation about the people who are succeeding, and that's understandable. But let's just touch ground for a second, if you will, on the plan, because they prosper every time we fail, you know. And if they can keep us captured in captivity and we don't come to our senses, because the word of God says, and that we may come to our senses and escape the snare, the trap,
the devil having been
by him to do his will. The devil has a will, and his plan is to get his will in your hand. And that's what I see is going on in the community. So the sister said that people don't want to support people in the community, and I agree with that. When someone have a solution and is willing to exercise it openly, that's in the field, and then you're surrounded by people that can't assist you and don't do it, it's happening.
Yep.
It's going on. So I thank you for bringing that up. We can break the press that they're putting down, you know, because they have a solution for this mess that's going on. You know,
all right, Coach.
That's a big solution.
All right, Coach.
And I'm gonna simmer down right there, man. She just got me excited.
No, don't you?
I like the fact that you brought up, you know, sports in a conversation, because, you know, that's one of the things, you know, Black people in particular, we've been taking over all the sports one by one. But I think that that's how it has to be communicated, talking about entrepreneurship and business. It's a competition. And you can win, and it's up to who's going to be the most creative, who's going to be the most witty, and who's going to be the most resilient. And I think that when it's communicated like that, that's something that Black people, young people can understand, because, you know, they love sports. They love competition.
Mm-hmm.
They love to win.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that they can win at. If they learn the rules, that just like football or basketball, if they learn the rules of the game, then they can win at this too.
There you go.
Yeah, you said something right there.
Wow.
Mm.
Wow.
Yeah.
When, Mr. Dabney, when do you see the change coming for proactive success in the hood? You're a young man. You got a lot of years ahead of you. When do you see it coming?
It's twofold, you know, because it's really a complicated situation. But at the point to where we have older people, successful people, examples, mentors that are able to be comfortable and not afraid, kind of like what 3072 was talking about, is about looking at these people that are in trouble as being in trouble. They're people. But it's not they're in love with the behaviors, or they just, you know, advocate them even. Hell, they just don't know what else to do. So I think, you know, whenever you have mentors, successful people, young and old, that are able to step in a genuine way and provide a constant stream of information and example. And then also whenever you have a culture shift, you know, a little bit with the younger people, because it's also about them too. The younger generation right now is very, very entitled. Whenever there is like a culture shift to where it's different, to where they will be accepting, where they feel accepting of, or just when life beat them upside the head enough, when they feel accepting of that information. Because I think that we can't go without saying that it happens a lot. The question you brought up earlier, Ruben, when, you know, you come to a young person and suggest to them a benefit or a way out, and they turn their nose up at it. You know, that's not fast. I don't want to do that. No, that's not for me. You know what I'm saying? That happens a lot. And that's not just something to where everybody that's not doing well, that's young, just doesn't have anybody to tell them right. That's not true. A lot of people have stuff to tell them right, and they just don't want to listen. So it's, and that's kind of what the culture is. That's popular right now. That's kind of that's trending. So it's twofold.
Right.
Whenever, you know, the mentors are able to step in and feel, you know, not turn their nose up and give up on the younger people, or when the successful
yeah.
people don't want to give up on the non-successful people and just be like,
yeah.
them niggas don't want to do it.
You know,
and whenever the young people are, you know, changing to be more open to listening when somebody comes up and says something to them.
Let me add this to what you're saying, and I'll use this illustration of a thoroughbred horse. What they do to the let's use a Mustang, a racehorse, okay? What they do to the Mustang is they send it out in the wild first for the first few years, and they let it do its thing and build up its strength. Then they capture the thoroughbred or the Mustang, and then they put a bit in its mouth and begin to train it to the function that they want for it. And
mm-hmm.
that becomes the best competitive horse. So what I'm saying is, Mr. Dabney, sometimes our loving people, we got to snatch them out of the wild of the hood and put them in a structured therapeutic environment where we can be focused and deliberate about the outcome of their behavior.
Mm.
And so I
hear that and identify with that, Ruben. And one of the things I want to point out on that is that, you know, when you're out there trying to recapture that Mustang back, you can't be timid about it, or that Mustang going to raise up and kick you.
No, you can't.
Because
horse got his own will.
Yeah,
the horse got his
so
own will. And his own will is to break in a run. But you've got to train, break its spirit and retrain it to the role or the behavior that you expect of it.
And that's not pretty, and that's not inviting all the time. That's a messy process. If somebody watch it, they might even say it's inhumane.
Again.
So I think that that has to be understood, that if that's the type of breaking process that's going to take place, that it's not going to look pretty when it's happening.
But you'll be successful in the end.
They don't like it. You think that horse don't even like it. That horse don't want to be captured.
Hold on one second. And 37-2. I got 8 minutes, 37-2. Go on, squeeze yourself in.
Okay,
there.
Well, I was going to disagree with the taming and the capturing of the horse. He do want
to
be
Go
captured.
Go ahead, talk to me.
He want
to
be captured.
Talk to me.
But he needs
to
be captured with finesse. With finesse.
Yeah.
Again, he could be the biggest, baddest, blackest, wildest horse. He can be tamed, and it don't have to be forceful all the time to tame him. You just have to
hold
find
on.
His.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Right quick. Go ahead.
Okay. You just have to find that way. Don't nobody want to be beat or shocked into anything. I want you to catch me, but I want you to catch me.
Hold on
mm-hmm.
one second. 37-2. With all due respect, man. With all due respect, ma'am. If I'm running off the cliff, ain't nothing pretty about that scene. Don't you try to be pretty about catching me. Snatch my behind. And we'll talk about it after I get to safety.
And incarcerate you, I guess.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. I said snatch my behind and keep me from going over to my destruction. And we'll talk about
okay.
that. If you got to hold me down until I get my senses, do that because you're saving my life. If you got to now.
The last means. That should be the last means is all I'm saying. Sometimes we want to make that the first and only means, which is why the horses knock you out and get away still.
No, see,
I think this is a really fitting analogy, but I think one of the things that has to be said and why I might disagree with 3072 is that when you're trying to be cute and play coy with that horse, you are putting yourself at risk for injury or death yourself. So in order to protect them and you as well as trying to help them,
right.
that's what happens sometimes. You be trying to help
right.
these people, and they drag you right down their bit too.
You
know what I mean?
Go.
You're trying to mentor to a young person. You bring them in your home, show them stuff, and then they come back with some people
yeah,
trying
run
to rob you
right.
or something. You know, so you can't expose, you know what I mean? And I think that's where some of the hesitation definitely comes in at with some of the successful people or some of the older people where they
right.
don't want to deal with them. It's because if they have to play by these nice rules and stuff like that, then it's just better to stay away because I can't jeopardize me and my family to try
to help and
you.
And again, it's back to knowing what to do. I never said I would take them into my home or jeopardize myself. But again, just to keep myself safe, I still don't have to be as harsh and as aggressive as the streets has been to them. Obviously, they need something different.
37, your point is well taken. I got 5 minutes. And I got 5 minutes. I'm going to wrap this thing up. I want to give my guests a little more time to wrap up the conversation. Thank you for coming, Mr. Dabney. I hear you, 3072, but I want to finish it. I want to close this off because I think you're making a great point, 3072. Mr. Dabney, give me about a minute and a half, summarize where we are, and thank you again for coming.
Yes, no problem.
Mr. Dabney. Go ahead, Mr. Dabney.
I guess, yeah. Yeah, so can you
hear
me?
You got the floor. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, I just think overall, just looking, you know, back, making summary, I guess, of the conversation that we're at, you know, here, you know, I think that there definitely has to be some example going on for, you know, bringing the people to be self-sufficient, produce their own income. There has to be an example. We got to reach out to them and show them how to do it. I think that it has to be strongly communicated that this is a long game, and it's not a quick one, and it's not a short one, because we want it to last. You know, we don't want you to get this money and lose it in a little while. We want you to keep it and pass it on to the future generations. I didn't bring it up, but I want to piggyback off of it to summarize as well. Say, yes, there has to be a well-defined plan, you know, for how you will be successful, because without the plan, it's not going to work. And then one other thing to add to the summary is that we didn't talk about it today, but failure is something that will come and cannot be discouraging. I think sometimes when people try to start turning around, doing the right thing, they get going and they have a setback and they get discouraged and kind of quit. And like, I knew that wasn't going to work.
Agreed.
Failure is a major part of it. It's going to happen, and it's going to happen quite often, especially when you come in from such a behind position. You know, you already didn't have a whole lot of information that the people you're competing in business against do have. So you should expect to have many setbacks, but you should be diligent and get over them and understand that they're natural and it don't mean that you are, you know, inferior or anything. So, yeah, okay. That's pretty much.
I hate to cut you short, but we down to 2.5 minutes. Man, Pastor Waller playing with the clock again. Listen, let me say this. My late dad used to say all the time when he was whipping us, "I'm whipping you because I love you." And that's one thing my people got to realize. We got used and fixed in our way. And the only way we're going to be saved is somebody going to have to snatch us and break us from that habit. And they're doing that because they love you. Now, if you don't love me and if you don't know what you're doing, leave me alone. But when somebody comes to try to help you and save you, you can fight against it, but you will lead to your own self-destruction as a result of it. And that's one of the first things we got to tell our people. Listen, you know, you can't blame the white man or nobody else if you're not willing to make a change for yourself. So that's the point I want to – Pastor Waller, give me 30 seconds, Pastor Waller. I got a minute and a half. 30 seconds, right quickly before we get out of here.
I want to thank everybody who had a chance to speak. You know, the word of God says, whosoever will, let him come,
let him
right? Then it says, I like that part when it says, if you willing and obedient, you can eat the good of the land. So I understand that's what she's putting out there. You have to be willing. And that's what I was. I was willing, so I started eating the good of the land, man. That means change is necessary, and it can be accomplished.
Man. Pastor, we're going to have to bring this one back, man. Let's bring this one back.
Yes.
3072 be throwing blows and then run. Thank you. Thank you for joining us.
She's blessed with the increase tonight, man.
Yeah. Thank you for your contribution, 3072.
All right.
We're going to be back next Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m. And I hate that we have to leave so soon, but we appreciate it. Mr. Dabney, thank you again, sir. We have to have you back again. Mr. Raphael Dabney, CEO Tego Industry. Tell us how we can reach you. Give us a website right quickly.
Yeah, you can reach us at tegol.com, THGOL.com. And, you can reach us on there. You can also find us on Facebook.
All right.
Yeah, thank you, brother. You're encouraging.
Yes, sir. This has been Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dockery, and we'll be back next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock p.m. Until then, we greet you in the words of peace, shalom.
Well, son, I tell you.